It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Past the hour, and we are off and running again for another live broadcast on the horn. Conversation radio underway for this 11th day of January 2018. It would be the 124th birthday of my grandmother. And, well, it would be it's another argument for the fact that human lives are far too short. She'd have a blast right now. She was one tough, resilient, take-no-bullshit lady. I mean, we're talking about somebody who started teaching school in 1912 and didn't stop, dear God, until almost 1970. Got run over, my grandmother did. Broke both of her knees, crushed them. Doctors told her she'd never walk again. She walked. One of the enduring memories of my childhood is the smell of the Absorbine Junior liniment that she would use on her knees every evening. She wore elasticized knee braces to the end of her days. And she, on this very ground, she was putting in a garden every summer up into her 80s. It was a life well lived. A most Christian woman. A most pious and devout student of her faith. Would have been 124 years old today. The first day she went to school, she came home and she looked at her father. And she was the eldest of his second family. And he said, "Well, Idie, how did you like school?" And she said, "Oh, Poppy, it was wonderful. When I grow up, I'm going to be a teacher." And she was. And she always said that to her, learning was like drinking cool water. That was back when the cool water around here was safe to drink. So, you know, wherever you are or aren't, happy birthday, Gran. Happy birthday. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday on the horn, again, the 11th day of January, 2018. This program is, of course, live. If it's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday, and it's between the hours of 6 and 9 p.m. Eastern Time, you can almost always bet this program will be live. Very seldom are the occasions in which I absent myself from the microphone. And with it being Thorn in the Side Thursday, we will have lots of, you know, those kind of stories. Oh, yes, we do. Yes, we do. But before, of course, we get into that, we have thanks to send out. Thank you very kindly to our subscriber, Mary Bell, in Kansas. Thank you ever so much, Mary Bell, for being part of the subscription team that keeps things going here for a significant part of every month. Thank you to Christopher in Oregon. Thank you, Christopher, also part of the sustaining subscription team. Thank you very kindly to John out in over in Maryland. Thank you, John. And thank you as well to Brendan in Oregon and to Tony, one of our longest-standing subscribers. Thank you to Tony in Chico. Thank you, one and all. So that's our subscribers for the 11th day of the month. And let's see here. If you'd like to be a subscriber, well, we're still looking for 400 of them. And we're nowhere near that. But if you'd like to be a subscriber, well, just run on over to headonradionetwork.com and click on Contribute. And there's a little box there by the PayPal thing that says make this a recurring monthly donation. Put the $10 in, which means that you're supporting the program to the tune of a little less than 16 cents per hour of programming. By Grapthar's hammer, what a bargain. And after that, well, just set it and forget it. And hopefully it won't mess up or anything. It does happen from time to time that people's cards expire or get stolen or messed with or whatever. And if you would, I never write to anybody when their subscription goes sideways because I figure either you meant it, either you canceled or, well, you'll catch the mistake. And I don't want to bother people. This is why we struggle. If you hate PayPal, if the very thought of PayPal makes you crazy, you can go to patreon.com, patreon.com/Bob Kincaid. And there you can subscribe, and we welcome that as well. Well, damn, thank you, Marty, for at least letting me know the MP3 White Rose Society stream appears to be down again. No idea why. Wish I could do something about it, but oh well. At least well, wait a minute. Brother Deacon Asa is telling me both streams is afoot. So I don't know who to believe here, but hopefully Asa's right and Marty's wrong in this case. I'm rooting for Asa. So it being Thursday and the way we're trying to work things out this month to see if maybe this is a good way to go. I'm keeping track of all the subscriptions, and what I hope will happen is that by the last week and a half or so of the month, we will be able to have a fundraising-free week of broadcasting. In order to do that, we have to meet our fundraising goal every evening. We're okay up to last night. Tonight, we got $200 to raise, the usual $200. 10 at 200. Or 10 at 20, 20 at 10, 10 at 200. Wishful thinking. 1 at 200, 2 at 100, 4 at 50, 8 at 25, 16 at 12, 50, 32 at 6 and a quarter, or, of course, 64 at $3.13, because we'll round up from 12 and a half, and we'll put that half penny into the fund that goes for the new tires on the Gulfstream 5. Yes. So there it is. But if you want to do Patreon, that's cool. Or if you just want to kick in, there's a PayPal interface at both headon.live and headonradionetwork.com. Use either one. That'll be fine. Early question coming in from Albert in Rhode Island. Hey, Bob, can Mueller subpoena Trump to testify if he finds anything? I'm pretty sure he can. And that precedent was, of course, established during the Clinton presidency by none other than the husband of Kellyanne Conway. How's about that? Mm-hmm. By the way, News Ninja Gene saying Asa is confirmed. Tune in is loud and clear. Thank you, News Ninja Gene. Thank you very kindly. Les letting me know the same. Tune in is working. Yay! So that's wonderful news. So anyway, hopefully we'll knock out the fundraising goal and just have a regular goal for tomorrow night, and it'll be groovy, and we'll go forward that way. And if everything works out, let's see if we keep up with the fundraising goals. Let me look here. If we keep up with our fundraising goals, no, that's the clock, dummy. Calendar, yes. If we keep up with the fundraising goals this week and next week, we should have fundraising free broadcasts from the 22nd of January all the way to the end of the month. And how exciting and wonderful that will be. But we got to keep up. So thanks to everybody who does keep the program on the air. Okay, so that's out of the way. And it's, yeah, thank you, Don. My first choice is iTunes, then the live stream. iTunes is working. Goody. That's, I can't tell you how, that's just a downright pleasure to know. So it's been weird here today. As in 70 degrees in early January. Mm-hmm. Got down into the Agnes and me both. We were kicking covers off and kicking each other as the night wore on. But I'm not complaining because come Saturday we're back down to the brutal side of January and overnight lows of 9 and snow and January kind of behavior. So if we got up to 70, does that mean our buddy Robert in Australia and everybody else in Sydney and everything that y'all got down to like freezing or something overnight? I doubt it. No, we're just living on a planet with a wrecked climate, and according to some stuff I read on Facebook earlier today, if we would only all stop eating beef, well, golly, we could stop having to worry about climate change if everybody would just be vegans. Okay. Yeah, we'll just leave that there. But it was warm today, and when it gets warm like it does, and here in the studio right now, no gas going, nothing, 74 degrees. I can tell you it is the first time, I think, in the history of this program, the more than 12-year history of this program, I think it's the first time that I've ever done naked radio in January. From time to time, I'll get emails from Jim asking me what I'm wearing. Well, in this case, it's what I'm not wearing. Yes, that's right. It is Naked Radio Thursday, the 11th of January, 2018, at the Horn. Not even so much as a banana hammock. Nope. Stark naked. And because you got to celebrate 70 degree January days somehow, you know, if you're in Appalachia in January. And go ahead, feel free to apply the eye bleach at your leisure. Use it liberally, as it were. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sorry. Marty said, thanks for the image, Bob. Pass the rum. No, it's the eye bleach you want. It's the eye bleach. Because, you know, rum will make you do terrible things. But, yeah, little Nate, and that's the beauty of radio. It's all in your mind. Yes. But with temperatures like this, I saw a little bit of green poking out of the ground earlier today. And, well, doggone it, it got me thinking about, well, spring. And those spring tonic plants that mean so much to us all. And that's why I got on the blower and I called the periodontic, peripatetic, hardworking scientists down the hill at Horn Nutraceuticals, at Horn Labs on Twitter, and I asked them if they could work me up a nutritional supplement that would encompass all the goodness of spring tonic greens. And they did. And consequently, I am proud to offer you this evening as this evening's bullshit nutritional supplement, because, of course, you can't be a real, live, honest-to-goodness professional radio program unless you've got a bullshit nutritional supplement to hustle. Yes, that's right. I'm talking about Pofolk's Poke Salad. Uh-huh. Only the tenderest small leaves. That's the way you got to pick them. Small and tender from the pokeweed. It's a woody, purplish stemmed, and the berries are poisonous as hell. But the little tender leaf greens, my goodness gracious, they're delicious, and they will pick you up and toss you across the room. They are so doggone efficacious. Po-folks have eaten them for centuries. And, well, they've survived, haven't they? Yeah. So that's why I'm proud to tell you about Po-folks Poke Salad from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. And if you act now because operators are not standing by and it's not a free call, well, doggone it. You can get a 3-month supply of Po-folks Poke Salad for only $72.93. $72.93 for Po-folks Poke Salad only and exclusively here via the hardworking peripatetic periodontic scientists at Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. It's a proprietary blend of Po-folks Poke Salad. Carefully picked, carefully cleaned, carefully rinsed, dried, ground, powdered, and put into capsule form and shipped out to you if you order the 3-month supply with a little bundle of test strips so that you can find out what we already know here at Horn Nutraceuticals, at Horn Labs on Twitter, that in point of fact, Po-folks Poke Salad has no nutritional benefit whatsoever because it is, in fact, another bullshit nutritional supplement that we have to have here in order to be a professional radio broadcast. Yes, you can use those test strips any way you wish. You can you can stir your coffee with them. You can you can strap them to your belly. You can do anything you want with our test strips, but you only get them if you order the 3-month supply of Po-folks Poke Salad. That's right, it's non-GMO, it is cage-free, free-range, vegan, cruelty-free, and cage-free, as well as gluten-free. So it's free of, well, it's also free of poke salad. It's free of everything. Just send in the money, okay? And you will not get a 3-month, so you see how it works. That's right, Po-folks Poke Salad from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. Use no hooks, post no bills. This side up, FOBCODPOKESALET, Po-folks Poke Salad, only from Horn Nutraceuticals. See, everybody's always trying to find an angle here. Okay, says Earther, so I can't buy one, get 29 free. Can I pay for 29 and only get one? That's going to cost you extra. Mm-hmm. All these special orders cost extra. So, in the meantime, that's, you know. And will it, Scott and Punky with a question. Yes, but will it help me perform the Bo Weevil Wobble and the Pork Chop Stomp better? It absolutely will, Scott and Punky. And personally, I want to see Punky do the Pork Chop Stomp. I sure do. Because, well, that would probably become a viral video is what that would be. It'll do anything you need it to do, as long as you believe. Because all of these supplements are infused with the Tinkerbell essence. It only works if you believe in it. Meanwhile, a weather report in from Robert in Australia. It's 75 degrees Fahrenheit here in Sydney, 24 degrees Celsius. After 3 days up in the 90 degrees to 110 degree range, we've had that massive thunderstorm at 4 a.m., 4,600 lightning strikes, and it's been gray and overcast and 75 ever since. P.S. Today's what the moment. Yesterday, the local supermarket had hot cross buns on sale. Is Easter in February this year? Maybe they were trying to ward off the lightning. You know, who knows? Who knows? Meanwhile, sorry, it's Naked Radio. You got to live with it. Jeff from Hell Hole, Indiana says, Bob, I'm trying to have dinner here. This is the program that ruins meals. It just is. John sends a note along. Meat production, there is a company now that sells beef chicken made from cellular matter, touted as an alternative to livestock production. At 97% less land waste, it is promoted as the future. Video available on YouTube. Well, I'll have to check that out. Meanwhile, Steve down in Georgistan says, Hey, Bob, I'm here, just not in the chat room, still elevating the ankle, coming through loud and clear on TuneIn on the Roku. Yay! Good to know. Thank you. Keep getting better. Keep getting better every day, Steve, down there in Georgistan. You're in capable hands with the magnificent and wonderful Miss Karen, along with little Cletus and little Twiggy. Yes, they're good puppies. They're such good puppies. They're very good. Laurel wants to know, My God, Bob, just how large is your medicine cabinet? And how do you have time to take them all every day? Well, it is made considerably easier by virtue of the fact that they're all imaginary. So I just imagine taking them, and then I start getting the imaginary nutritional benefits, just like anybody else who orders vitamins from a goddamn radio show. See how it works? Yeah, absolutely. And so at 21 minutes past the hour, something else, and I love this, because you know how I feel about history. That's right, it's time for This Day in Horn History. Yes, indeed. For today's edition of This Day in Horn History, we're looking 12 years into the past, all the way back to January 11th of 2006. Bob opens the show apologizing for his absence last night, but he says it was for a good cause. I personally think Asa is digging out all the shows that I did, programs that I started after being gone the day before, so it'll look like I've spent a lot more time away from the microphone than I actually had. And we're going to have to talk about that, me and Asa. Bob opens the show apologizing for his absence last night, but he says it was for a good cause. He says he was attending a Democratic Party event in Charleston, where both former Governor Howard Dean and notorious coal villain Don Blankenship, along with his lackeys and his pencil-thin mustache, were present. I remember it very well. Don Blankenship, Bob goes on, a friend of mine looked at Blankenship, then looked at me and said, I didn't know snakes could walk. Bob's in the middle of telling the audience how personable Governor Howard Dean was and how much he enjoyed talking to and taking pictures with him when Isis the cat attacks the studio. Those were terrifying times. Isis the cat was ferocious. While Bob's busy chasing the cat away from the studio, he explains how sick he's getting of the ongoing Sammy Bad Breath Alito hearings. Bob distills it down to Ted Kennedy's against Sammy Bad Breath, James Dobson's for Sammy Bad Breath. Who do you side with? And sadly, in a manifestation of just how unfair the universe can be, we no longer have Ted Kennedy, but we still have James Dobson, as was evidenced in last night's program. James Dobson, the man who said you need to whip children until they cry real tears. The issue that's really driving Bob up the wall amidst the Alito hearings, and I remember this well, is that Alito's in favor of strip searching underage kids for drugs. Bob ends the first hour by posing an interesting question. What would the right-wing outrage machine do if a cop strip searched Paris Hilton or Ivanka Trump? Bossman Wayne calls in for the second hour. He's watching Governor Joe Manchin's State of the State with the volume muted while talking to Bob. That's really the best way to watch Joe Manchin, with the volume muted. Then Jim calls in during the second hour. Bob's all hot and bothered about the prospects for America as an ongoing concern if Alito gets appointment to the bench, and he's proven to be every bit as awful as I suggested he would be. In response, Jim comes up with an observation that's rather profound. Nations are like people, says Jim. They are biological entities. They have their growth and development, they have their maturation, and then they have their demise. And that is perhaps the way America is going. And that's a look into the past, all the way back to January 11th, 2006, for This Day in Horn History. Brother Deacon Asa is beginning to give me the idea that I've been right about a hell of a lot more than I've been wrong. And, of course, I've never accused the New River of flowing south or made reference to any Titanic plates, so I've got that going for me, too. Mm-hmm. So it's 25 minutes past the hour, and that means we've gotten all of the front-end stuff out of the way. So I guess that means it's time to talk about shitholes. Yes, that's the word of the day, because, well, that's the word that the President of the United States used. That's where the presidency is now. We get a little closer to President... Well, no, we're not closer, because frankly, President Dwayne Elizondo Mountain Dew Camacho was probably a much smarter individual, is a much smarter individual in the future, than is Dimwit Donnie. But Jesus. So there was a meeting in the Oval Office, and there was a discussion about immigration. Holy cow. And Dimwit Donnie doesn't really understand the whole concept of immigration, but he is a racist. There's no getting around it, and at some point in time, his id is going to take over his superego, and he's just going to say that word that we all know that he knows very, very well and probably used a lot back when they were taping The Apprentice. At least that's what folks who know what's on the outtakes say. The Washington Post reported that the Oval Office meeting included several members of Congress, lawmakers, legislators, and that those legislators mentioned the fact that it might be a good idea to restore the immigration protection of people whose immigration protection he has recently taken away, folks from Haiti, most recently El Salvador. Honduras is coming up. As well as protection for people who have immigrated from countries in the continent of Africa. Senators Lindsey Graham and Dick Durbin of Illinois were making proposals. They were at the meeting. And... In a moment of sublime irony, Trump spokesman Raj Shah said, "Certain Washington politicians choose to fight for foreign countries, but President Trump will always fight for the American people. Like other nations that have merit-based immigration, President Trump is fighting for permanent solutions that make our country stronger by welcoming those who can contribute to our society, grow our economy, and assimilate into our great nation," said Raj Shah as he stepped on the fingers on the rung of the ladder below him. So the conversation was taking place about restoring the protections of people who have been heretofore rendered unprotected, who had previously had what is called temporary protected status. In exchange for doing that, these legislators are saying, "And we might give you $1.5 billion for your wall if you do it." Because you have to give the tiny-handed two-year-old toddler in the 71-year-old meat suit a surprise when if he does anything at all right. The Washington Post reported that Graham and Durbin thought they'd be meeting with Trump alone, but they were surprised to meet immigration hardliners Bob Goodlatte of Virginia and Tom Cotton of Arkansas at the meeting. And they were all standing around talking about immigration issues when the stable genius asked, why are we having all these people from shithole countries come here? El Salvador. Haiti. Nigeria. Any other country on the African continent. Niger. Liberia. The Gambia. Namibia. The imaginary African country. Why are we having all these people from shithole countries come here? That's bad enough. Because, of course, if one knows anything about the history of colonialism, if in fact countries are shitholes, odds are European countries in the United States have had a big part to play in why they are. I mean, El Salvador? Really? El Salvador wasn't a shithole. El Salvador was a goddamned abattoir, thanks to the Republican Party, thanks to Ronald Reagan, thanks to Oliver North, thanks to John Negroponte Bolton. That's not just any shithole, that's our shithole. We made that. But that's the worst part of it, but it is not the dumbest part of it. No. Anytime you think that Dolt 45 has said something really dumb, all you got to do is hang out for a minute, and you'll find out that he's capable of something far more stupid. Because, you know, he's not just going to offer a criticism. He's a stable genius. So he's got a suggestion to make. It's not just that he doesn't like people coming from shithole countries, and curiously enough, all the shithole countries are countries that have brown people in them. No, the Carotene Caligula then asked, why aren't we letting in more immigrants from? And this is an indication of how his mind works, because remember, the Prime Minister of Norway was here just a day or so ago. And so Norway is on one of the few remaining brain cells that the spirochetes haven't yet consumed. More on that in a minute. More on that in a minute. So he asks, why aren't we bringing in more people from Norway? Curiously enough, it is a fact that we have Norwegian members of the Horn Family Community Congregation, Swedish members, folks from Finland. Hi, Scandinavia Horn Family. But Donald Trump wants to know why it is that Norwegians aren't scrambling to come here to Merca, the greatest country in the history of the world on earth today, forever, now under God in the universe. Amen. Not realizing, of course, that no Norwegian in their right mind would move to the United States of America. The only people who want to come to the United States of America are people in countries that are worse off than the United States of America, and frankly, under Donald J. Goddamn Trump, we are narrowing the space between the two. But he had immigration on the brain this morning, because early this morning he was tweeting, lowest illegal immigration rate in years at Fox and Friends. Norway. He wants to know why there aren't more Norwegian immigrants. Let's talk about that for a minute. In Norway, if you fall on hard times, you probably won't starve to death. In Norway, there's a pretty good chance that you've got a roof over your head that is impervious to the elements. And you can be warm in the not as long as they used to be Norwegian winters. In Norway, if you get sick, you can go to the doctor and not immediately then go bankrupt. Mm-hmm. In Norway, you can eat food. And not have some goddamn Republican sitting there complaining about it. Right, Arthur says, so by closing the gap, you're saying he's fixing immigration, Bob? Oh, we're getting fixed, all right. Kind of the way we use that verb to describe certain of our pets. Why can't we have more nice white people from Norway? Norway's not a shithole. Here's the fun part. The White House will not deny that he made the shithole comment. The best they can do, as noted, is trot out Raj Shah to claim that certain Washington politicians choose to fight for foreign countries, but Trump will always fight for the American people. Well, some American people. Not all the American people. This shouldn't come as any sort of a surprise, of course, because it was back in June when Trump said that everybody coming from Haiti, they all have AIDS. He said that if immigrants come from Nigeria, they will never, quote, go back to their huts. Right. That's what we're dealing with. And, of course, it's straight up racism. Over at Chicken Noodle News, Caitlin Collins tweeted, staffers in, she's an Alabama grad, so hence the accent. Staffers inside the White House aren't worried about Trump's shithole remark, with some predicting it will actually resonate with his base, not alienate it, much like his attacks on NFL players who kneeled during the national anthem did. She chose the wrong comparison. Let me see if I can fix this tweet. With some predicting it will actually resonate with his base, just like it did when he said that obviously some Nazis and Klansmen are good people. Ta-da! But, you know, how much does it matter? It's further evidence that he's a madman and a racist. And there is the 33%. It's 33% of the country, like based on my conversation with Scott last night. He's got 33%. For whatever he wants to do, he's got 33%. That means in order to get a majority, all he's got to do is convince another 18% or so. That's easier than having to dig up an entire 51%. Yeah. Shithole countries. Hung Like Jesus tells me, you can tell where Trump goes on the internet because shithole is a commonly used term by the far right. Didn't know that, but it makes sense. It does indeed. So, in the meantime, again, the White House isn't saying he didn't say it. Because, well, there's nothing embarrassing about a president who talks about other countries that way. It's interesting, though. You know where I first heard that term? It's a, it's part of, because there's a lot of movie lines we use around here in the family. Habit. When we're leaving somewhere, quite often, I'll look at Ferg or Agnes, and I'll say, "Let's roll, Crixie. The sooner we get out of this shithole, the better." It's a line that was uttered by Kevin Tye, who played the Baldwin Felts heavy in the John Sayles film Matewan. The shithole to which he was referring was southern West Virginia. At another point in the film, he says, "Well, when I die, I know I'm going to heaven because I've already been to West by God, Virginia." The implication being that having been to West Virginia is the equivalent of having been to hell. Let's roll, Griggsy. The sooner we get out of this shithole, the better. Yeah, I know. Special, isn't it? What's pathetic, though, is that he can just casually dismiss the problems of the developing world by suggesting they're all just shitholes. There are hundreds of thousands of people who are in this country under temporary protected status who come from those countries he refers to as shitholes. And he, by God, wants them out of the country before something awful happens, like they get the right to vote. And you're going to hear more and more talk about the lottery system and chain migration. Do you know what the lottery system was about? The lottery system was enacted to correct pre-existing racist immigration policy that favored white people over everybody else on the planet in terms of being allowed into the United States. I mean, realistically, we have listeners in other parts of the world. How many Australians are clamoring to come to the United States, Robert? Over in Germany, how many Germans are just itching to leave Germany and come to this shithole of a country? Because, see, that's the thing. The Republicans, since the days of Ronald Reagan, have been working progressively, regressively, to make this country a shithole. Because libertarian wonderlands are, by definition, shitholes. You know what? When you turn on the tap of your, when you open the spigot, your water faucet in your kitchen, and the water that comes out burns, it's a safe bet you live in a shithole. I'm talking about Dimmock, Pennsylvania. When five people completely unrelated to each other, save for the fact that they live next door to each other, all get brain cancer and die, it's a pretty good bet those five people were living in shitholes. When a 12-year-old little boy can't play in a city park without being gunned down by the police, that's a pretty good indication that he lived in a shithole. Need I continue? When the creek in front of your home runs with open sewage, you really do. That is, you are literally living in a shithole. That's Alabama. How many more? When those sedimentary layers under the Colorado River are filthy with uranium tailings, you live in a shithole. When the entire town you live in is built on top of an old uranium mine, you live in a shithole. When an entire subdivision is built on top of a toxic waste dump, you live in a shithole. When cancer rates in your tiny little village look more like the cancer outcomes for a city 10,000 times its size, you live in a shithole. When thousands and thousands of people who live in your county have had to have surgery to have organs removed because of where they live, you live in a shithole. Everything I've mentioned is something that happened or is happening now somewhere in the United States. When there's an entire portion of a state that's referred to as Cancer Alley, you live in a shithole. I could go on. But no, that's not the definition of shithole. That's the definition of free market economics and progress. There's only one metric for shithole in the world to people like Donald Trump, and that is, are there any dark-skinned people living there? One of the most brilliant chefs in this state, and yes, West Virginia has brilliant chefs, and he's a personal friend of mine, is an El Salvadoran. I reached out to him when I saw the El Salvador temporary protected status news the other day, and I said, "My friend, are you going to be okay?" He says, "Yeah, I'm going to be okay, but I got friends and family that aren't." The things that Republicans do to make life more miserable for people in this country would be astonishing if they weren't Republicans. I can speak to what it means to wake up every day and know that if you get sick, you can't go to the doctor. That's my reality. I know people who know what it means to wake up every morning and wonder if it's going to still be okay for you to be in America tomorrow. If you know what's going on here and you live in the mountaintop removal sacrifice zone, every trip to the doctor, if you get to go, becomes a fucking adventure because you never know which one of those doctor trips is going to be the one where he says, "Well, you got cancer. Don't know why." Our buddy Trey says, "Kentucky Stan is a shithole. Fuck the libertarian fantasy land." This country's covered in shitholes. And we like to spread the idea. American exceptionalism, y'all! I know. Uh-oh, I'm in trouble. Ron and Raleigh writing, Bob. "We can't go taking responsibility for any of the fucking misery we've spread all over the world. Do you think Iran would have been better off if we hadn't overthrown their government in 1953 or declared war on the Philippines or deposed Salvador Allende or..." You get my drift. Oh, I do, Ron, I do. P.S. So Joe Arpaio is going to run for the Senate. Does this old racist bastard think he's going to live forever? He's 85 now. If he wins and serves one term, he'll be 92. Are the people of Arizona that stupid? Do you need to ask? All the people of Arizona may not be that stupid, but that's not the question. How about the concentration of maggots in Arizona? It's probably higher than 32%, the 32% being the national number. It's probably a lot higher than 32%. You don't need all the people of Arizona to be that stupid. You just need 51% of them to be. Under the subject line, "Where to invade next?" Robert in Australia says, "Bob, we've been here. Michael Moore's Where to Invade Next film, in which he asked people living in various European and other countries if they'd like to move to the USA. Many were keen to do so until they found out about all the social services they'd lose and the low rates of pay." That'll take the starch right out of it. Jeff from Hill Hole, Indiana says, "This piece of human dung can use that language in the White House, but these white-winged fuckwits were outraged that President Obama took off his jacket." Well, he wore a khaki suit one day, too. That proves that he's a Kenyan Muslim usurper wizard. Shithole. On the other hand, however, and let me point out that instead of asking Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags directly about it, somebody needed to ask her, "Did he really say shithole, Sarah?" Because Because then you put them in that bind. You know, the headline I'm looking at says, White House does not deny Trump used racist, vulgar language to disparage non-white countries. No. And they trotted out somebody from one of those countries, or a heritage from one of those countries, to do the dirty work. Sarah, why does President Trump think it's okay to refer to a country as a shithole? But I guess folks, they never learned quite how to do that sort of thing. And since they don't adequately press her, in turn, you get Sarah Hasselbeck sandbags. Telling you that you're too stupid to understand. This clip from the White House briefing being a good example. It has to do with the irrational and the irrational and unhinged tweeting that Tangerine Tiberius did this morning over FISA reauthorization. And so he sent out conflicting tweets. So then, with that being the case, Hallie Jackson from NBC News asked Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags about it. You were there! Wait a minute. Hang on. No, that's no good. What the hell's going on here? Dee-dee-dee-dee. Thought I had that thing paused. There. Now it's paused. All better. Now you were there. Here we go.
Something that you said a couple of times now, which is that a lot of people were confused by that tweet. So Mike Pompeo...
Actually,
Tom
I
Monster,
didn't say a lot of people. You guys said a lot of people were confused.
We weren't confused, but some of you were. So I want to ask about that, because Mike Pompeo was obviously out talking about this, pushing for this. Tom Barsha, a lot of people in the president's administration were representing the president's position on this, that he wanted this to pass. His tweet today was confusing. It was contradictory. It just was. So how are people supposed to trust, not us as reporters, but lawmakers, stakeholders, policymakers, that the people representing the president's position actually are?
I think that the premise of your question is completely ridiculous and shows the lack of knowledge that you have on this process. I've tried to...
You're too stupid. You're a poopy head. This proud graduate of Arkansas Baptist Correspondence College, or wherever the hell she went, just told Hallie Jackson, who is by no means perfect, but is by no means a moron, that she's too dumb to understand the difference between these two tweets. One, House votes on controversial FISA Act today. This is the act that may have been used with the help of the discredited and phony dossier to so badly surveil and abuse the Trump campaign by the previous administration and others. Well, one, the dossier has not been discredited, unless by discredited he means largely proven to be correct. Phony? No, it's a real dossier, dumbass. And they didn't surveil badly. Apparently, they surveilled pretty well because they caught your national security advisor cozying up to, the Russians. So that was 7:33 this morning. About an hour and 45 minutes later, you get
With that being said, I've personally directed the fix to the unmasking process since taking office, and today's vote is about foreign surveillance of foreign bad guys on foreign land. We need it. Get smart.
Get smart? Get smart, says the staple genius. So those are the two tweets that Sarah Hustlebuck Sandbag says that Hallie Jackson doesn't understand.
I think that the premise of your question is completely ridiculous and shows the lack of knowledge that you have on this process. I've tried several times. I'll do it a tenth time here. Look, the president supports the 702, but he has some very strong concerns about the Pfizer program more generally. Again, this is why he put out a memo last week outlining such, and why the DNI director put out a new policy this morning. Yep. I'm not sure what the confusion is there.
You're saying that the president's tweet this morning was, in your view, not at all confusing and not at all contradictory. You think that's an accurate statement? I just want to be very clear about that.
No, it wasn't confusing to me. I'm sorry if it was for you. Jake.
That snide, smarmy, side-winding, lowered in a snake's belly in a wagon rut, beady-eyed. Oh, I'll quit while I'm ahead. It was, but it was an inartfully asked question, too. She used confusing, and then she used contradictory, and that gave Sarah Hustlebuck Sandbags a way out. Of course it was contradictory. Because sometimes the spirochetes say one thing, and sometimes they say another. Spirochetes are funny that way. Robert in Australia answering my question. Australians who want to go to the U.S.? Some scientists have gone to the USA or Europe for work due to the better funding. Then there was Andy Thomas, an aerospace engineer, who joined NASA and became an astronaut. He also became a U.S. citizen. Since the USA took over our film industry, we speak better English than the Mexicans, was the quote. You'll find a lot of Australian actors moving to the USA, mainly for work. Australian actors really successful may stay. Many end up coming home. Beyond that, I can't think of anyone. I can think of one American who ain't no way you can get him to leave Australia. He's busted his ass to stay there, because he knows what it would mean to come back here to the shithole. Oh, yeah, it appears to me that the best way to get film work as an actor these days is to be Australian. At least two of the principal cast of Outsiders that we were all watching until the Jesus Channel, the Jesus Network, bought Tribune Broadcasting and brought it to an end, were Australians. The cast of the... What did it last? 5 seasons? 5 years? Black Sails. Mostly Australians and brilliant actors into the bargain. And they do speak mighty good English. Interesting how much easier it is for people who speak good English to learn how to speak bad American English than it is for people who speak bad American English to learn to speak the decent English of other places. Go figure. Part two of Robert's answer, the really successful may stay, many end up coming home. That was just a correction. Ron and Raleigh with a note. Well, hell, Bob, Michelle Obama had the temerity to wear a sleeveless dress, that shameless hussy. I know, and they call her Michael. Yeah. Clarence with a note. Subject line, shithole creator. Bob, the idiot in chief, was the creator of the shithole of Atlantic City, New Jersey. This guy never stops with the bullshit. Never. Never. Never, ever. note coming in from Laurel. Despite being well past my prime with a name like Hansen, there's got to be some way that Norway can take me back. Well, you know, Agnes and I were just sitting here talking the other night. There's no way the blue eyes came from Scotland or England. Yeah, they did, but it's weird. My grandfather on my father's side had blue eyes. My grandmother on my mother's side, the woman whose birthday it is today, had blue eyes. And I wind up with blue eyes. Both of my parents had brown eyes. That's because they each had one blue-eyed gene and one brown-eyed gene, and they both contributed the blue-eyed gene, and hello me. Probably just a great big ball of recessive tendencies. Oh, well. But that's all. Yeah, that's all Scandinavian in origin. That's the intermixing of Norse folk with the natives of the island there. Whether that be Scotland and the island, or England the island, or Ireland the island. Different islands. Or Wales, for that matter. But I get the idea that, no, they're not interested. Mm-mm. Nope. Sorry. And, you know, how happy would I ever be, you know, if I didn't have to listen to or watch my windows rattle with mountaintop removal blasts every few days. It's just too much normal going on. So that's the end of the filibobster. Again, we had $200 to raise this evening. Thus far, we are at zero. It would be nice to knock out the 200 bucks so that we don't have 400 to raise tomorrow in any combination, but especially knocking out the 200, 10 at 20, 20 at 10, 1 at 2, yada, yada, yada. So that we can have that week and a half of fundraising free radio at the end of the month. I'm looking forward to that like I look forward to spring. I'm not kidding. So let's take a break. If you want to get involved in the program, you know how, 304-574-8178. Or Skype to Skype from anywhere on the planet that'll let you use Skype. Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, Bob Kincaid Horn. And that'll get you into the program. No need to apologize, Robert. Robert says, sorry, I forgot about people like Rupert Murdoch. And wouldn't we all like to forget about him? People who abandoned the country for greed. Oh, I can think of a couple of Australians I wish that you guys could have somehow kept out of the airport. Rupert Murdoch. Ken Ham. Yeah, how would you like it if we came over there and if a hillbilly went over there and used your tax dollars to build since he did the ark, let's build a giant whale that swallows people, a Jonah Park. Yeah, see what you, yeah, that, see how you are? Right. Yeah. Okay, so jump in if you want in the program. It's Thursday, and so consequently we have the Green News Report ahead, which I always enjoy. And thanks very kindly to our buddy Hoghead in the chat room for the bumper. Lo and behold, this doesn't look like it's just going to work out fabulous. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Shithole town. a boom and a bottle of twang. Got my vaccination with a rusty E-string. Traded my soul for one that worked, and I got us all a gig at the Lutheran church, singing John Wesley Harding as the rain came down, playing rock and roll music in a shithole town. Shithole town, shithole town, playing rock and roll music in a shithole town. Baby, you got the Gitas, I got the nerve. Everybody's just looking for somebody to serve. Gonna play my harmonica until I rip, and that's right about now. The last time that I checked, honey, here comes the train, here comes the sound. Tonight we're playing music in a shithole town. Shithole town, shithole town. Tonight we're playing music in a shithole town. Shithole town, shithole town. Playing rock and roll music in a shithole town.
It's Thursday, January 11, 2018.
It's our worst fear coming to life for us right now.
Record rain and deadly mudslides hit California in the wake of record wildfires. Trump administration reverses expansion of offshore drilling, but only for Florida. Plus,
today, New York City is ending that decades-long pattern of deception and denial by holding these fossil fuel companies to account.
New York City sues the oil industry for climate change damages and will divest from fossil fuels.
All of that divestiture and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
These companies knew as far back as at least the 80s and perhaps earlier that burning fossil fuels would have ruinous impacts on the planet's atmosphere and that it would change our climate, exposing the globe to sea level rise, increased heat, and severe storms.
What do you have against disaster capitalism, sir? This is your Green News Report. So, Desiree, not long ago, a lot of us in Southern California were feeling pretty lucky, given the size of the fires out here, the fact that 44 people had been killed in Northern California, but the death rate was much lower down here. Now we have these floods in the wake of that huge fire in Southern California, and it's clear we really weren't lucky at all.
Yes, it's true. In Southern California, rescuers are now racing to find survivors that were trapped by mudslides and flash floods in areas of Santa Barbara County that had been stripped of vegetation just last month in those record wildfires. Torrential rains on Tuesday night, at one point dumping nearly an inch of rain in only 15 minutes, triggered powerful rivers of mud that demolished more than 100 homes while residents slept. At least 17 people are confirmed dead as of airtime. That number is likely to rise. More than a dozen are still missing.
And is it fair to say that had we not had that huge wildfire in the area that was struck by rain, we would not have seen those mud flows and those deaths?
It's very likely. In a press conference, Santa Barbara County Sheriff Bill Brown said the devastation looks like a war zone.
The only words I can really think of to describe what it looked like was it looked like a World War I battlefield. It was literally a carpet of mud and debris everywhere, with huge boulders, down trees, power lines, wrecked cars.
That same storm system also shattered San Francisco's rainfall record set back in 1872. This storm's destruction comes in the wake of the announcement that 2017 set a record for climate-related extreme weather disasters that cost the United States $306 billion in economic losses.
And frankly, untold numbers of lives. And I gotta say, as far as I know, Donald Trump hasn't said one damn word about what's happened out here in California.
In politics, Trump Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke has reversed a widely condemned proposal to expand offshore drilling, but only for Florida, not any other state. That was after a meeting with Florida's Republican Governor Rick Scott. In a statement, Zinke said, quote, Florida is unique and its coasts are heavily reliant on tourism as an economic driver.
Yeah, much more unique than those crappy coasts on California, Washington, Oregon, Maine, North Carolina, South Carolina. Who cares about them?
Florida's Democratic Senator Ben Nelson, a longtime opponent of offshore drilling, called the reversal, quote, a political stunt orchestrated by the Trump administration to help Rick Scott, who is expected to challenge Nelson for the Senate in November.
Trump administration? Political stunts? Not possible.
Democratic and Republican governors of coastal states are also asking to be removed from the offshore drilling expansion, since all of them also have billion-dollar tourism industries that would be harmed by an oil spill. The decision to exempt only Florida in an apparent political favor could also be illegal, violating strict procedures that bar federal agencies from arbitrary and capricious actions, giving ammunition to environmental law groups and states who plan to challenge the administration's offshore drilling. Finally, in a major move, New York City announced on Wednesday it is suing five of the world's largest oil companies for damages caused by climate change, and announced that the city's massive pension funds will divest from all fossil fuel investments by 2022. The lawsuit alleges that the oil companies knew that burning their product would cause dangerous global warming and lied about it. Repairs and resilience work to harden infrastructure against extreme weather disasters and rising seas is projected to cost the city more than $20 billion. In a press conference, the city's chief sustainability officer, Dan Zarilli, noted that fossil fuel investments have underperformed the market recently and characterized both moves as an economic imperative.
The impacts of climate change are no longer theoretical. It's not just happening far away. It's here and it's now. We're already spending billions to protect this city, and much more will be needed this century to protect New Yorkers. And that's why the city's lawsuit filed last night in federal court is seeking billions in damages to ensure that our city will be ready to withstand these impacts.
The lawsuit is very similar to lawsuits that clawed back billions in damages from the tobacco industry.
Go get them, New York City. For much more on all of those stories and the ones we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
It's up to you, New York. New York. New York.
18 past the hour on this Thorn in the Side Thursday, the 11th of January, 2018. And, let's see, Glenn chimed in after the after the bumper music, Shithole Town. Glenn said, been there, done that. Places like Reidsville. I've been to Reidsville. The Route 7 Inn, Rockin' My Shoe Tavern. We actually played at the Lulu Bell Inn on Cheat Lake. One great thing about the Lulu Bell was that no one ever fucked with the band. Yep. Glenn continues and said, I remember that place. Remember that? Jeans. I remember that place. I lived about 200 feet from that place. If I remember right, all they had was Bush beer and potato chips or something. That sounds like the greater Morgantown area. Yep. So, yeah. Thanks, Glenn. Blast from the past. Under the subject line, Droning of the Shrew, unprofessional is about the best that can be said for the piece of white trash they put up to huffing and puffing behind the White House press podium. My mother had better terms, huzzy, heifer. She might qualify, according with Southern usage, as a common shit-ass, though. Hadn't heard that one in a while, common shit-ass. Yep. Could be Trump's got a lot of shit on his mind lately, anyway, when you consider that fat, tacky bitch he's got up in everybody's grill lately. Regards, Steve, on the Gulf Coast. And away we go now, over to the phone lines to check in with Jim. Hey, Jim.
Hey, how you doing?
Pretty good. How about you?
Well, just dealing with some computer problems. I had a charger that went out of my laptop. But last night, I just put you right through my Kindle with earphones and got you just fine.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We're all over the place.
Well, here you are. Going number one, did he really say shithole country?
Yes.
Today?
It was reported by the people who were in the room. He referred to shithole countries.
Wow.
With specific reference to El Salvador and countries in Africa. El Salvador, Haiti, and countries in Africa.
He's such a diplomat. Speaking of diplomats, that thing he has up there behind the podium, she is what we call a blivet.
10 pounds of shit in a 5-pound onion bag. That's how they define it in the southern part of this state.
No, no, no.
That's a blivet.
It's a blivet is a person who thinks they're old.
You broke up on me. A person who thinks what?
You think they're a roll of toilet paper. Because that's all she does every day when she gets up there is have him wipe his ass, you know, on her.
Well, it was always defined as 10 pounds of shit in a 5-pound onion bag. You know, onion bags are not particularly solid. They're sort of net.
Well, I prefer blivet. Yeah. I prefer a person to take a roll of toilet paper. Because that's basically what she is. She just unrolls herself and just gets all over, gets his,
you know, one of the more nauseating thoughts that accompanies any viewing of Sarah Hasselbeck's sandbags is that whenever she's done being White House spokes creep, she's got a, because of wingnut welfare, she's got a job waiting for her, Jim. It'll be out the door at the White House and in the door at Fox. Or hell, maybe MSNBC will hire her. They hired Nicole Wallace from the Bush administration. But
well,
she'll,
that's not saying a whole lot for Fox. That's typical with Fox. But for MSNBC, well, they got Joe Blow Scarborough up there. I mean, you know, some others too. I don't really, what appears to be as though the level of competence is just being slowly degraded among a lot of, places like MSNBC, for example. Are you there?
I'm right here.
Anyway, I heard this click. I thought, well, it must be somebody listening in. But when you said that tonight about shithole countries, I mean, can you imagine President Obama saying something like that?
I can't imagine Richard M. Nixon saying something like that, at least not in public where anybody could hear it. Now, maybe drunk half out of his mind and with a couple of good second-alls under his belt, you know, moaning away to Henry Lee shithole countries. Okay, sure. But no, not under these circumstances.
Uh-uh. Man, we have just come to a new low. And it's getting lower and lower every damn day.
And Lindsey Graham was shocked, I tell you, Jim, shocked. They about had to get out the smelling salts when he heard him say shithole country.
Oh, no. I feel so sorry for this thing.
Miss Thing. Sorry, had to.
She lives someplace where you call her, but she's got another residence called Peckerwood. But, you know, he's just going along with anything in the world Trump's saying, as they all are. They're locking they're locking
right because somebody has told
around him.
Somebody has told him what it is that the Trump has on him.
What do you think that is?
Oh, he's taken a shit ton of Russian money.
Ah. Well.
And now the Russians are getting so bold. I guess you saw that yesterday. This one oligarch, Deripaska, is suing Paul Manafort and his buddy Rick Gates, saying that they made off with 18 million simoleons.
I would say nice money if you can get it, but that's not so very nice money. That's for damn sure.
Nope. Hey, whatever's up in the background, could you turn that down, please? Thank you.
I'll think. Just a minute. Trying to, oh, hell. Is that better?
Yes, considerably.
I can barely hear it. My God, your hearing is much more acute than mine, or your mic, or whatever. I don't know. I just had the TV going. I was watching this thing about Champollion and the deciphering of hieroglyphics. It's a really interesting program, too.
About half to be.
Mm-hmm. I even have a book about an Egyptian grabber and how he did this. How those guys deciphered that language and hieroglyphics and it's just incredibly.
Well, if you ever, they were able to do it because of the Rosetta Stone.
Right, but I mean, even beyond that, how they were able to take numerical sequences and stuff like that and plot it out. Lord have mercy. I knew when I was in Paris, I did visit his grave and put a flower on it. It's Pellechev. It's where he's buried. Right near Jim Morrison. But anyway, so that was just an aside.
Well, if you ever want to read another fascinating translation story, you know, it's only of the last 20 or 30 years that we've begun to be able to read the hieroglyphics of the Mayan people.
I understand that.
And the struggle to translate that is a fascinating story as well, and it centers around a scholar by the name of Linda Sheila, S-C-H-I-E-L-E. I think she came from the University of Texas. Fascinating story.
I don't know how in the world she'd been able to figure that out, that's for sure. I mean, the Rosetta Stone definitely was a key to it, but Lord, the Mayan written text, well, that's something else. But going back to our dumbass leader, now he's trying to pull this thing about libel laws. Now, you're a scholar of the law. Now, I thought libel laws were basically state things, aren't they?
I wouldn't expect him to know that. What he doesn't like is the fact that there are Supreme Court decisions that control the issue relative to the Constitution of the United States. That's what makes it federal.
Okay. Well,
but the idea that he would be concerned about libel laws in light of the fact that he spent 4 years running around slandering Barack Obama, well, that's kind of rich.
Oh, yeah. Not to mention that book that's come out recently in which they have all these tapes that have been transcribed into it. And then his effort to try to get this guy who's trying to... Oh, his greatest nemesis right now, they're asking him if he will sit down and have a one-to-one with him, I guess no-holds-barred situation. And he said, well, what's the need? Because there just wasn't any. I mean, he just thinks just because he says something, that's the way it is. I mean, I used to hear from that idiot he had, Sean Spicer, about alternative truth. And my God, they've raised it into an art form, haven't they?
Yes. This is the most... I remember during the Dim Leader, during Dim Leader's presidency, during the Reign of Error, there was a lot of talk of how Orwellian that had become. Looking back, that was normal now. That was the 7-minute cartoon before the feature film that is this.
Yeah, that's true. There's just not a whole lot of basis into what the truth is. They have no idea. The truth is simply, well, talk about it's the first casualty. Well, God, it's been long, long dead since the first shots were fired in that administration. In the White House now, that's for damn sure. I mean, I just don't understand the... I mean, these are just fantasies that these people just go out. And they were... I think Randy Rhodes or somebody was counting down, or somebody else, Stephanie Miller, had this countdown of over 2,000 lies. I mean, he doesn't give a shit about the facts. All he does is just say what comes off the top of that slickered head of his.
I think it qualifies as an updo when you get right down to it. Oh, well, yeah, sure, and there's no better example, Jim, than that of a couple of days ago. The meeting on Tuesday where he managed to not fling poo at anybody. And, of course, the for-profit media ran out and said, wow, that was very presidential of him. And then no sooner than that, than Trump starts bragging about what he said and said, I've received great reviews, including letters that came from news anchors about my performance.
You really think so? I mean, I think, you know, it's like somebody, it's just, I mean, he's like Norma Desmond. Somebody's just writing him letters. He's got a Max in there who's just writing him this fan mail. You know, remember Sunset Boulevard?
We'd oh, yeah.
Max, when Eric von Stroheim was Max, her servant.
I'm ready for my close-up, Max.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a Max out there that's just writing him all these fan letters and bullshit stuff. And he must, because I guess that's the only way they can really try to get along with that son of a bitch, because he is just so
Jimmy's mattered in a March hare.
Of course he is. But, I mean, you know, he's just like a big baby up there. He needs to wear a big diaper and have a big rattle and a baby's cap on.
That's why I refer to him as the 2-year-old in the 71-year-old meat suit.
Yeah. Is his physical tomorrow?
Yes. But there will be no mental component to it whatsoever.
Well, have they ever had a mental component to it that they've used before?
You know, as there's a certain amount of assessment that takes place without knowing there's an assessment going on in any physical. I know you know that. You've been through physicals.
Oh, yeah.
Because they check to see, they subtly check to see if you're oriented as to time and place, and then I've sat in on mental status exams that were not subtle. You know, who was the first president? What day is it? Where are you? What state do you live in? What county are you in?
Oh yeah, I've had to go through myself. Oh yeah, I've had to go through all that stuff. I mean, but I just wonder exactly how strict those components would be with him and how much authority they would have to employ or be able to.
Well, the fact of the matter is he needs things that you can't get asking questions. He needs an MRI of his brain.
Well, definitely needs some serious diagnostics, that's for sure.
I mean, I'll say this, and it's a hard, brutal thing to say, but I'm not saying anything that I haven't heard other people say as well. If that shit's starting on me, I want to know, because I don't want to live through it. You get my meaning?
Live for what? I'm sorry.
Something like Alzheimer's. I don't want to live through that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I don't want to wind up in a place where I'm the only person who doesn't know I was ever alive.
Well, you've got a point there. There are a lot of things worse than living death, than actual death. That's living death. And, well, I think his father had that, didn't he?
Yes, that's a reason for concern. His father was absolutely eaten alive by Alzheimer's.
And I think if they
dared to stick him in an MRI, they'd probably find there's something wrong in his brain, too.
Yeah, probably so. Probably so. And, of course...
I mean, I presume that they'll do blood work. Blood work can reveal some things if they test for it.
Oh, yeah, it can reveal cancer. It can reveal all kinds of things. Sure. The presence of certain, elements of the blood. Blood work can be extremely sophisticated.
Pathogens, but again, you have to test for it.
Oh, yeah, they do. And one would assume that with the type of physical he will undergo, that they would test for everything possible. I mean, everything possible being defined as what I consider to be the very best medical care to which he is entitled.
They will run, I have no doubt that they will run a CBC, a complete blood count.
Okay, they're going to do a white count or whatever. Okay, what else?
They will run a PSA.
Yeah, for his prostate.
Right. I mean, he's 71 years old. At this point in time, it's almost guaranteed that the process, he's somewhere inside a prostatic process. Very few people get to 71, very few men get to 71 who don't. It's more of that intelligent design.
Yeah.
They'll run a lipid panel. Which means, depending on what time they're doing it in the morning, he should probably be NPO as of right now.
I don't think he is.
But the toddler is not going to tolerate that. The only problem being, it's going to result in A, invalid numbers, or B, massively elevated numbers. They'll run an A1C on him to see if he's diabetic, considering his diet.
He's probably scarfing down a piece of that chocolate cake he loves. So,
well,
he's had a big haul of fast food in there.
According to the book, he likes to be in bed by 6:30 with a cheeseburger.
In bed with a cheeseburger.
Yep.
What watching Fox?
Yep. Although sometimes he tunes over at about 8 and catches Chris Hayes. We know that.
Oh, wow. That's some high living, Bob. Right there in the White House.
Swimming pools, movie stars.
I know. God damn. Excuse me, but I mean, he's there. It was the very best medical care available, and he's probably not going to, observe the thing of NPO, nothing after midnight or whatever it is. He's probably, because of hours he keeps, and let's see, he's probably over there just tweeting all this kind of stuff. I mean, how many tweets does that asshole do a day?
I can't tell you per day, but we can take a look here and see. I don't know if it'll tell us how many tweets he's got or not. Let's look here. Hold on. No, it just shows how many followers and how many he follows.
Well, whatever it is, it's one too many. And he's going to go on. Now, tomorrow they have they resolved a continued resolution?
I don't know.
Now, tomorrow, is that a drop dead date for it? The government runs out of money tomorrow?
I want to say yeah.
I think so. They're going to have to come up with a continuing resolution, or the government will shut down effectively. I know they had 80 months that are up there going on about it today, but I just couldn't even turn on the sound for that son of a bitch. And then if Trump was making the Great Wall.
Sparky tells me it's the 19th, not tomorrow.
It's the 19th?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought it was tomorrow. I don't know why. But anyway, he's going on about his Great Wall being part of that. And the Great Wall of Trump. And now he's receiving something on that. And, of course, I've always referred to his Great Wall as a 13th century solution to a 21st century problem.
Yeah, it wasn't much of a solution in the 13th either.
Not too much. I mean, you know, it's just ridiculous. And I don't know what he's going to do with all these people who have been taken into our country that he wants to throw out. I mean, I don't know. I just don't know. And I think he's trying to offer some type of reconciliation to a point on both the wall, as parts of it are concerned, because they're natural boundaries that don't need a wall. And maybe he's trying to step back from throwing all these people out. How many people are going to be thrown out if they decide to do what he wants to do?
Well, more than a quarter of a million people from El Salvador alone.
You're talking about what? A lot of people. And that's not exactly a nice place to be. Have you ever been down there?
No.
You don't want to go. You don't want to go, let me tell you. You don't want to go.
Costa Rica, I would not mind seeing.
Well, the place El Salvador is no Costa Rica. That's for damn
sure. No, not by a long shot. By the way, Asa tells me that over the years, Trump has sent out something on the order of 36,700 tweets.
36,000 tweets. You know, I've never tweeted in my life.
Oh, you'd love it.
I don't think so. You know, I can, my Facebook is enough. I mean, what the hell do I have to tweet about? You know, when I put stuff on my Facebook, I will put it in a red background with the worst things that I can say about Trump. The worst things. And as far as, I mean, tweeting is concerned, I don't know anything about it. Can you just give me a short...
Tweeting is considered microblogging. When it started, you were limited to 140 characters, not 140 words.
I remember that.
But 140 characters. It has since been doubled to 280. And since it's short, it's like the tweet of a bird.
Now, what is the audience of your tweet? And I guess that depends on what type of account you have.
Well, no, it depends on what you do. You can protect your tweets so that only people who follow you can see them, or you can just hurl them out into the universe and see what Twitter's algorithms do with them.
With widest possible whatever.
Yeah, and then... and then it depends on how many people retweet your tweet and how many people like it. In other words, make it popular.
I remember in the military when I would write letters and stuff like that or directives and had distribution G, and G meant for widest possible dissemination. That means everybody would get it, depending on the, you know, the designated. I guess that's the equivalent, right? Sort of, thereabout.
Yeah, but you have no real control over who gets it, but you can use things like hashtags, like, say, you know the little pound sign, the tic-tac-toe sign on your keyboard. You put down that, and then you put in, say, Trump is a racist. So then your tweet will show up for anybody. It'll show up in the list of tweets that had that hashtag in it when people look it up.
Mm-hmm. You know, Bob, I think that's one modern pleasure that I'm just not going to indulge in, you know. I don't see any need for it, really.
It'd probably just annoy you. I mean, there's fun stuff out there, but a whole lot of Twitter is just people arguing with each other.
You know, it's a funny thing. Whenever I put out my statements about Trump, I don't ever get any feedback, any negative feedback at all. None. I guess that's the limit of, you know, the friends that I've made on Facebook, which are almost like 400. And they pretty much go all around the country. And when I do that, are they afraid to make a negative comment about it or agree with me or whatever, or they just, like, let it slide?
Mostly they just see it and move on.
Well,
if they see it,
Well, I think that's about the way it was when he was running for the presidency. People just saw what they wanted to see. And boy, did they see a lot. And now that asshole is up for almost his anniversary coming up, and yeah, look at where we are now in the eyes of the world. We look like pure shit. I mean, he's talking about shithole. He better look to his inside the borders of his own country for some real shitholes.
Well, they're not hard to find.
No, they're not. You were enumerating a few just a few minutes ago. And, but, it, you know, the fact that a man who is in his position, of course, you know, I'm doing a reality check here. Yeah, of course he'll do it. Would use words like that and would literally portray himself as being what he is by his language and not have any reservation whatsoever. I mean, he just thinks that he is absolutely untouchable. And to a certain extent, he is untouchable. I mean, you talk about the Teflon Don. He is. Think about it.
Well, who's going to nail him? He will
be. We don't have any chance of impeaching him.
He will be until he isn't. You know, this business about, well, you know, I don't see why I would need to sit down with Robert Mueller. I don't know. We'll see. You know, the fact of the matter is Mueller does have the power to drop a subpoena on his ass, and then he doesn't get to say no.
Well, will he do that?
It depends on whether he feels like he needs it. If he's got something and he wants to put him under oath so that he can lie about it, so that he can then indict him for lying to the FBI, yeah, he'll do it.
Okay. Well, everything I've heard, there's a hell of a lot of evidence stacked against him, and he would really run from that the way a vampire would from the rising sun as to have to deal with it.
Yeah, but remember the lesson from Nixon. It's not the underlying crime, it's the cover-up.
Well, they only got Nixon on one thing. How many things you think they can get in trouble?
Oh, no, they got the bill of particulars on Nixon was pretty lengthy.
Yeah, but one big thing got him.
You mean Watergate?
Right. That's what really nailed him.
Watergate was the overarching. But what nailed him to the wall was the lying and the cover-up.
That's what I'm saying.
And so in Trump's case, you know, it's relatively easy to prove the lie. And it's all a question of whether or not Robert Mueller thinks that the matter is serious enough to make it a constitutional challenge. See, I don't know, you've probably seen the ads on TV for this Tom Hanks, Meryl Streep movie, The Post.
Yeah.
That sort of puts the Washington Post in the middle of the Pentagon Papers instead of the New York Times, which was the one that was in the middle of the Pentagon Papers.
Right.
And, of course, Meryl Streep plays Katharine Graham. And Tom Hanks plays Bill Bradley. Bill Bradley, isn't it? I know it's Bradley.
Yep.
And it's you know, it's all about how patriotic the and how necessary it was for the Washington Post to do what it did. But Jim, anytime I see Ben Bradley, not Bill, anytime I see Ben Bradley and Katharine Graham's name mentioned, I can't help thinking about what would happen a decade or so later. Ronald Reagan, they had Ronald Reagan dead to rights.
Didn't do it. They should want to go through it again.
With the Iran-Contra scandal.
Just they won't go through it again.
And Katharine Graham said, America cannot stand to go through another constitutional crisis. And that statement by her has driven me crazy ever since. I mean, I remember when it was said.
I do. And
I've remembered it ever since. And what she was doing was she was putting herself in the place of the Constitution itself. Having an impeachment issue is not putting the nation through a crisis. It is the I've argued all along that would have been the Constitution operating as the Constitution was intended to operate.
Well, unfortunately, she did not wish, and I'm using the expression that they used in all the president's men, I guess it was she was threatened with it, of getting her tits caught in another ringer. I don't know. And Ben Bradley, I mean, I guess having gone through that one time and then seeing what happened later, they said, you know, why bother? You know, who are we? I don't know. I know Ben Bradley at that time was his wife, her name was Quinn. Guess whose house they bought up in Montauk?
Oh, whose?
Gray Gardens. You know where Edie lived?
Yeah.
And they completely redid that place. Completely redid it. I mean, they wanted to destroy it, but it was really a beautiful home, and they wanted to keep it. It's original state of preservation. But Ben Bradley said, you know, every time it rains, you cannot get the smell of cat piss out of that house. Have you not seen the documentary that Basil said about Edie and Little Edie?
Yeah.
And the movie that was done about them. It's really, really sad in a way. And I think both of them passed away. And Little Edie would get up there in those outfits. She didn't have any hair. And they were even thinking about doing a lot of clothing that she had designed. But anyway, I just got off of that because I'm not sure. I think Quinn was married to Bradley.
Sally Quinn.
I think they, yeah. And right down the street is Martha Stewart. So, I mean, you know, I guess they still have the place. It's a beautiful home and it has beautiful gardens and everything. It's just superb now that they've redone it. But it was one of the more interesting things that I saw. And I saw that movie back when the Basils first did it back in the 70s. And it was a cult classic back then about those two. But getting back to our real nasty guard, Mr. Bush, push him wherever he can. How is he going to be able, or will, let me ask you this, why or how is this prosecutor, or this man who has the potential to subpoena him, will he have the guts enough to do it? Based upon the preponderance of the evidence, and there's a lot of it out there. You know, Trump's always, I'm going to sue. Hell, he's done that all his life. I mean, how will he, do you think he will actually do it?
Well, I mean, how do you define do it? I mean,
actually bring him forth into a situation in which he has to raise his hand, swear an oath.
Well, it'll go, if Mueller subpoenas him, it will go all the way to the Supreme Court. Because the White House will resist it, because having the president testify under oath in front of the special prosecutor is the ultimate in jeopardy. It's given the documented number of times that Donald Trump has lied, and the fact that he's got a history of lying in depositions, it's almost a guaranteed conviction for lying to the FBI. So they'll fight it all the way to the Supreme Court. Then the question will become one of, will he comply or will he not comply? And if he doesn't comply, will the Congress do anything about it? Now, that's what most people mean when they say constitutional crisis. Now, the other route is that there could be an unsworn interview. Now, what the Trump lawyers have argued for is that there would be no in-person interview, but that Trump would submit written answers to written questions. That's bullshit.
That's bullshit.
Trump wouldn't be answering any questions. It would be the pettifoggers in the White House.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be the same equivalent to what Nixon tried to do with the transcripts of his tapes, you know? Remember that, when he wanted to have it read by some old senator named John Stennis, who could barely read to see the print? And my God, so much of the stuff that Nixon had out was so redacted, you couldn't even make sense out of it. Because every other word he used was an expletive or an obliterative. And we talk about not the same thing, but the equivalency is what I'm trying to say.
No, only John Stennis may have actually been a little bit less dishonest.
Well, hell, that poor man could barely read. I mean, he was not exactly the top of his game. He wasn't. That's the reason Nixon wanted him there, because, you know, he was sort of
a dotard.
A dotard. Dotard, whatever you want to call it. But I just don't understand this thing of why haven't they? It is really a danger. And here we go now. It's the next thing I just want to share with you or discuss with you, North Korea. Now, we both know why North and South Korea are trying to get together a little bit, have an ease of tensions. And that's because of the upcoming Olympics. That's part of it.
Yeah, Pyeongchang.
Right. And so, I mean, and it would be in their best interest to do so. Now, Trump's going to take credit for all of that. And, you know, he's going to say, well, it wasn't because of that. It's because of the fact that I threatened with my big button to eliminate his little button. I would just love to hear him speak his praises about that.
Well, we learned a little bit more about. It depends on how you look at these things, but the de facto president of the United States, Vladimir Putin, said today that Kim Jong's bad haircut is a shrewd and mature politician.
Yeah, he got a point there.
Putin, according to RT, said, "I believe Mr. Kim Jong-un has certainly won this round."
Well, he doesn't have to say that because he really has, in a certain extent.
He has a nuclear weapon and a missile with a range of up to 13,000 kilometers that can reach almost any place on Earth, or at least any territory of his potential adversary.
Yeah, all the way over here to D.C.
He is shrewd and mature.
Well, Putin has contributed enough by way of whatever means to ensure that Kim Jong-un has that capability and has that strength and that, you know, something to offer at the table. So, but I mean, Trump's going to take credit for all of any type of easy attention whatsoever. And it's not at all. He has nothing to do with that. If anything, he's just trying to excite a lot of bad feelings and hurt a lot of people. But the easy off will be, due to the Seoul Olympics and not the anything Trump's ever done. And one other thing, I know you got other people waiting on you. That address he made before the farm people, in which did he not say to them how he had given them such a pleasure,
should be great. He commanded them to give him a standing ovation, and then told them they should be grateful he gave them the privilege of voting for him.
Mm-hmm. Okay, the privilege of voting for him. I've never heard of such in my life.
Well, you're going to love this, too. He was asked during some impromptu questioning after an event today. They asked him how he expects his physical to go tomorrow, and he said, "It better go well, otherwise the stock market will not be happy. I think it's going to go very well. I'll be very surprised if it doesn't."
Well, I hate to tell you, buddy, I think that stock market is heading for some rough times. It can't just go so high.
Well, I figured out a way that they can do a mental status exam.
Okay.
They can give him a colonoscopy.
Okay. Well, after saving
tough
a few
crowd.
Dollars,
damn it, I'm giving myself a cowbell for that. Yeah.
I think after 72, they don't even bother with those too much after you get in your 70s. I don't think they do. I'm not sure, but I don't think they do. But as far as his middle, going back to his middle faculties, they would need something bigger than just a fiber optic thing to get their head in that ass of his.
Well, this much we do know. The statement about the results of the exam will be released tomorrow. And this coming Tuesday, Dr. Ronny Jackson, the White House physician, will provide details on his health and, it says, take questions.
I'm sure they will. But going back to the stock market thing, okay, it crushes at 25,000 plus. Now, how long do you think that is going to last? Really?
It'll last as long as, one, corporations think that they're getting away with murder, which they are.
Uh-huh.
And it'll probably... I'm not a great analyst of the market. I'm really not.
Okay.
It's my understanding that a lot of these gains come from prices being driven up by companies buying back their own stock after the tax scam.
Mm-hmm.
Supposedly 1929 can never happen again.
Don't count on it.
But there's a certain rise of the machines aspect to it because of the speed of the electronic transactions.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I guess we'll have to wait and see what happens there. But I can guarantee you one thing. If it should collapse, or if it should go into bad, or if it should drop, say, what do you think would happen if it drops 1,000 points tomorrow?
Oh, 1,000 points? Nothing. Nothing.
It only took 500 back in the 1980s to cause a lot of people a lot of problems.
Yeah, but when it's at 25,000, you can lose 1,000, and then, you know, it's no big deal.
Yeah, I just wonder.
It's sustained losses.
Well, I think they're coming. I really do, because
Does the law of gravity apply? What goes up must come down.
Exactly.
Or the bigger they are, the harder they fall.
Yeah. Or by all say it will correct itself, and when it corrects itself, it's going to be a great big red F on somebody's homework. That's the damn sure.
Well, if there's one thing that's more likely than anything else to breed the problem, it is this administration's obsession with deregulating everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that way lies 1929.
Well,
because
there
are people out there who want a completely, and they are Republicans, and they want a completely unregulated, free, laissez-faire market. Never mind the lessons of history. Never mind the panics. We only talk about the Great Depression of 1929. But the history of the young American nation up to 1929 is a history of a series of panics and depressions.
Oh, God, yeah. Lord, before 1929, how many panics did we have in the 1900s?
And then on a worldwide basis, I keep hearing the stories about all these cryptocurrencies, and apparently Russia's looking at getting into the cryptocurrency business. But... I look at them and I think, look, tulip bulbs. You know, at least tulip bulbs were physical.
Mm-hmm.
The Dutch tulip market craze.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
How much difference is there between that and Bitcoin?
Not a whole lot. Not a whole lot.
Or the Scottish collapse that was occasioned by speculation in land in Central America.
Uh-huh, yep, that's one of them right there. There are any number of trigger points that can cause lots of problems as far as the world economy is concerned. We both know that, and, you know, people would like not to think so, but all these elements are extremely vulnerable, and they could just move in nanoseconds. They can.
Mm-hmm.
Well, listen, other than your opinion of the big game, I'll let you go. Got anything to say about the big game Monday night?
What big game Monday night? Oh, this past Monday?
Yeah.
Oh, I enjoyed it immensely. I bit my nails down to the cuticles and sent many prayers of Roll Tide Roll up to St. Bear of Bryant there at the right hand of God.
How much overtime do they do?
Oh, just one.
Well, that was quite a game, that's for damn sure.
Oh, it was last year was quite a game. It just ended the wrong way last year.
Well, I'm glad you had a very positive religious experience with your situation there. I was wondering if you were burning incense and chanting.
No, but I didn't do it. But the proper thing to do is to have a burnt offering of, or at least gently heated, gently smoked, offering of the ribs of a pig.
Oh dear.
And well. as for incense, you baste said ribs with a perfumious glaze of barbecue sauce.
But it says you had guacamole.
I did have guacamole, and it was good guacamole too.
Well, that's good.
One of these days, I'm going to have enough forethought that I'm going to order up a rack or two of ribs from the absolute holy of ribs, and that would be Dreamland on Jug Factory Road down in Tuscaloosa.
You talked about that.
Oh, I don't care who or where. That's when God goes for ribs, God goes to Dreamland.
Well, it must be something else for you to present it with such accolades. Well, listen, I've enjoyed our chat, and I'm glad the game came out in your favor, and we'll have to see what the Clairol kid will do. Oh, for the first time, they did mention that he had his scout reduced.
Oh, yeah, that was, yeah.
I just don't understand how that would work.
They cut out some scalp and they drag it forward or backwards or whatever to the side.
Is that to mean what hair is still left?
Yeah, it's to put hair where you want hair to be. For instance, say you've got male pattern baldness, you'd have a scalp reduction and maybe pull up that bald patch and make the hair come together.
Okay. My God, that sounds absolutely, what Nazi man came up with that operation? By Lord, it must be absolutely dreadful. I mean, can you imagine?
I know. Well, can you imagine the vanity?
Yeah, that hair of his is something else. You mentioned the other night how he's... Is it his daughter who helps him get his coif together?
Apparently, because she laughs at him.
And if you look at it closely, you can almost see some type of scar in the middle of his head. Just brushed back.
I haven't looked, but,
I was just noticing that after you had mentioned the scalp reduction. They mentioned that again today. Well, listen, you've got other people who want to talk. It's getting late. So
all right, you take care, Jim. Good talking to you. Have a good evening.
Yeah, I'll do my best.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Our buddy Jim calling from not far away. The proper religious observance is ribs from Dreamland because I guess the story goes that John Big Daddy Bishop was a concrete finisher, and anybody who's ever done that kind of work knows how brutal it is. And one day he was said to have prayed, "God, don't make me spend the rest of my life on my knees." And he came up, and apparently he was pretty good at doing ribs. And he opened a rib shack. He built the building himself. It's still there. And there is no better rack of ribs anywhere in the world. It's better if you can go there to Tuscaloosa and sit down and have them. But if you got to order them in, getting them shipped isn't shabby either. That's an unpaid product placement. 12 past the hour, and just a gentle mention, 13 past now, just a gentle mention, we try to raise $200 every evening. Right now we are at zero. So we are rapidly approaching looking at a $400 fundraising goal for tomorrow night. And that's rough. If anybody wants to jump in, they're mighty welcome to. The line is open if anybody wants to engage in conversation. A couple of notes coming in from Steve, a member of the fraternity of Steve. Heal, H-E-E-L, heal, H-E-A-L, thyself. Heal thyself. And yet, we'll never know anything definitive, given that the most innocuous, talking about the physical. We'll never know anything definitive, given that the most innocuous results of a physical examination are automatically classified as a national security issue. Hence, the sacrosanct status of the presidential mind and or body. Good appetite, active and alert, sound heart, all the usual spoon-fed crap the personal physician is rehearsed to communicate to the idiot citizenry during the 15-second interview. Recall Reagan in the last stages, propped up in the presidential high chair, affable, hair plastered, pitch black, and glistening, and staring blissfully into the back of his own eyeballs. Oh, those were the days, says Steve on the Gulf Coast. Meanwhile, with the subject line, electronic automated trading, Steve in New York says, electronic automated trading is what will cause the real crash, because once the sell-offs start, they'll grow out of control exponentially before the powers that be will know what's happening and suspend trading. The market will lose trillions in value before people even know what happened. Bill in Allentown says, I would compare the Dutch tulip currency only to gold or any precious metals. I guess that means Bitcoin is even more imaginary. Because it's all faith-based. Okay, let's run over and check in with Charlie in Tennistan. Hey, Charlie.
How's it going, Bob?
Pretty good. How about you?
Oh, pretty good. Somehow I've got you on Bluetooth, and I don't know how to get rid of it.
No, you're doing fine.
Oh, okay. I had the unfortunate event of servicing a ATM at the Gaylord Opryland Hotel whenever Donnie J was there.
Oh, beautiful. That must have been a nightmare.
Yeah, actually, I got there right after he left. And, I mean, I looked at some of the people that were there, and I don't think they had a clue. They were as excited as a porpoise at SeaWorld getting chum fed to them, you know?
I think that's kind of unfair it's kind of unfair to the porpoises, Charlie.
Yeah. But, it was something else. There were a lot of people there with, a good number there with ties on, and I think they were probably the leaders. And then you had the people that came up with the baseball caps on and all, and those were the ones that were playing follow the leader. So, it was definitely interesting to see what kind of people come to a Trump rally. And it's kind of like,
did it look a lot like going to Walmart?
It wasn't quite that bad. It was probably, if you remember the old show Hee Haw, it was probably looked like the audience that would show up to see a filming of the show Hee Haw.
I didn't know there was a live audience for Hee Haw.
I don't know. But, it was definitely interesting. And then there was some guy standing there in the hall, and he had on his big button that says Farmers for Free Trade. And I just about walked up to him and says, oh, you're why all our jobs are leaving.
Nice. And, but probably best not to get yourself in a brawl.
But it was definitely interesting.
Was security just a pain in the ass? And
no, actually, after that, I mean, I got there at the tail end of the thing, and there's a walkway between the Opryland Mall and the Opryland Hotel, and all that was shut down with steel doors and all. So,
jeez.
So I drove over to the Opryland Hotel and tried to find a place to park, and that was just about impossible. And so by the time I drove back over to the Opryland Mall, they had the doors opened up and all, so I could walk back through behind the Grand Ole Opry and go over to the hotel.
You put up a lot. You put up with a lot to make a living, Charlie.
Yeah, I know it. I didn't have many tools with me. I just grabbed what I could put in my pocket and went over there and did what I had to do and left. But it was definitely interesting. And then down in the Opryland Hotel, they had some kind of country music station there that was out in front of had a setup right there out in front of the convention center inside the Opryland Hotel. So I don't know. It was definitely interesting.
Like a trip to the zoo or the circus or the carnival is interesting.
And then whenever I went walking into the hotel trying to find a place to park, I parked in the check-in parking that you can park in for 15 minutes. And I asked them why all the steel gates were closed and all, and they said it was because the president was here. And I said, I can't believe they do all this for him. One of the people that was standing by the checkout desk there kind of gave me a dirty look whenever I said that. So
in other words, that Farm Bureau convention was taking place at the Opryland Hotel.
Yes, it was definitely for farmers. And what would have been, where they could have saved a whole lot of time and money if they would have let Trump there come there a whole lot sooner and have a combined convention for the guy that was running for senator of Alabama and Trump together. They could have got, they could have got the same crowd in one place.
If it had been in Alabama, it would have been the same people.
Yeah, but I mean, Alabama, it's not that far down to the Alabama line from Nashville.
No, it's about 120 miles, yeah.
Yeah.
I've made that drive a number of times.
So.
Of course, I usually get off at Saturn Parkway and take that on down to 43, and then 43 all on down to the Alabama line.
Oh, so you go through Columbia then?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Then, cross into the, Lawrence County into Lauderdale County?
Yeah. I remember, I can't remember what highway it was on. I had to go down and service a safe. And it was in some small town in Alabama, and I went back through Columbia that way. And there was an Amish guy that had... like an open wagon or whatever, and he was all crashed back in the seat. And the horses, I guess they knew which way to go. And, he wasn't doing anything except snoozing, and the horses were just pulling the wagon down the road.
Yeah, that's a little bit, it's just a little bit north of Lawrenceburg. There's a,
yeah.
I think it's a Mennonite community there.
Oh, is it Mennonites? Okay. Yeah,
when I was a kid, we used to drive up there every few months and get like a 3-gallon bucket of sorghums.
Yeah. 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 It was kind of interesting though, to watch the guy in the wagon, and he was just all crashed out sleeping, and the horse is like, okay, we got to go this way.
Well, I guess they know. Yeah. And they got lane. They got signs up and lanes for them and everything, so that, I mean, it's nothing to be driving through Lawrenceburg and see a couple of buggies.
Yeah, I know it. I can't remember. I think it was a Walmart in Lawrenceburg, or maybe it was a Dodge's Chicken. I can't remember, but they actually had places where the people could tie their horses up.
Oh yeah. Yeah, there's buggy hitching posts.
Yeah, and I thought that was kind of neat.
Their money spends too, Charlie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I'd say they probably I'd say probably, you know, the people in the Mennonite community probably have quite a bit of money, because that's basically they.
Well, the Mennonite philosophy is that they keep their money in their communities. That's why they're able to weather economic crises better than most. And so, over in Virginia, in the Harrisonburg area, there's a big Mennonite community. They basically got their own bank, and they finance each other's home building.
Yeah, tomorrow I'm heading down to South Carolina, Stan, to see my brother.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What part of South Carolina?
It's right outside of Fort Mill. It's called Indian Land. It's right almost, if you cross over to North Carolina, you're in Charlotte. It's right there on the border, on the southern side of the border.
Well, I always remember Fort Mill as being the place where Jim Baker was building a water slide for Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah, if you send anything to him in the mail, his zip code comes up Fort Mill, but where he lives, it's a housing development that was started by Dale Webb. And it's called Indian Land. So, I don't know.
Well, have yourself a safe trip and enjoy.
Yeah, I'm going to try to get across the Smokies tomorrow morning before it gets too bad.
Yeah, because I guess it warmed up down that way, too. And that's coming to a close pretty quick.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've got to get down Interstate 40 tomorrow morning early and get to Knoxville and take 40 out of Knoxville and head across the Smoky Mountains. And the Tennessee side's not too bad, but on Interstate 40, the North Carolina side, there's a lot of almost hairpin curves and tunnels and everything else.
Well, starting about midnight, we start moving toward rain here in the hills, this part of Appalachia. And we've got, you should be okay temperature-wise, we've still got we'll still have 60s and dropping down into the 40s tomorrow night. And then the overnight low tomorrow night's 20, but the high on Saturday is 23 with snow and a low of 9. That is, you know, and that will, of course, suck.
Yeah. I remember one time I was going up to D.C. to interview for a job, and I was heading up Interstate 81. And this is back whenever I lived in Kingsport, Tennessee. And I got lost and made the wrong turn, and I went through a big, long tunnel in what was called Big Walker Mountain. Do you know where that's at?
Yeah, you got yourself over onto 77 and came up into West Virginia.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you took the wrong turn off of 81 at Withville.
Oh, okay. But, I kind of like the picture you have on your headon.live. Where is that bridge located at?
Oh, that's the New River Gorge Bridge, Charlie. That's 5-6 miles from my house. That's the longest, longest single arch bridge in the Western Hemisphere. Used to be in the world until they built a longer one somewhere in Asia.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll get off here and let somebody else talk.
All right, Charlie.
Nice talking.
Always a pleasure. You take care, and we'll talk soon.
Okie doke.
Thank you. And travel safely, my friend.
Okie doke.
Bye now.
Bye.
That's our buddy Charlie calling from Tennistan, getting ready to hit the road. Note coming in from Scott and Punky. How long did it take for the Dow Jones Industrial Average to reach pre-crash levels? When the big one hits, and Scott says, and I'm not talking earthquakes here, the effect will be worldwide and lasting. It wasn't until November 23, 1954, that the Dow Jones Industrial Average closed for the first time above the peak it reached just before the 1929 crash. So that's 24 years. Wow. And I'm not sure, how long did the recoveries take after the Bush, the Bush drop in the late 80s and, or was it the Bush drop or the Reagan drop? It was the Reagan drop. That and then, well, you know what I mean. Let's go over and check in with Clarity. Hey, Clarity.
How you doing, Bob?
Hanging in there. How about you?
Oh, but, you know, in considering everything, I think I'm doing pretty well. I went to the dermatologist yesterday, and they just burned two cancer tests for, so I'm doing good in that respect. You know, most of your, the biggest organ in your body is your skin, after the liver, I think. So, but I have
no, the skin. The skin is the largest organ of your body.
It is, okay. Then liver second. Yeah, I have skin cancer on both sides of the family, so I have to watch it. And then taking the estrogen makes me more prone to all types, except prostate cancer, which I still have.
A prostate or prostate? You don't have prostate cancer.
No. I still have that gland.
Oh, okay. Yes.
And I just wanted to comment a little bit. I know probably Thomas is listening, that as he deals with people insisting that, you know, women can't have deep voices, you should Google, I think her name's Michelle Mariana, and she does voices for voices about in my range right now that I'm talking. And anyway, you know, it's, I get misgendered more on the phone than I do in public, so I guess I need to work on my voice. I just wanted to tag in on the talking about the farmers convention and what Trump has done this week about deregulating GMOs, which is going to be hard on organic farmers to get certified, you know, with the drift of stuff, you know,
right,
getting into. And, you know, the organic market is growing faster than conventional right now. And they're, in certain ways, they're putting, you know, their productivities are going up while some of the GMO third and fourth generation are losing their hybrid vigor and they're not getting the yields down the road. Go figure, huh?
Imagine that.
But, you know, it's a shout out to Dead Scalia, you know, letting Monsanto go unregulated. And it's a damn shame that, you know, there's soft touch on Roundup. Everybody's using it, and I've talked about this before, but the stuff isn't really safe, you know, the levels we're using it at, you know. Especially around here with the wind and shit, you know, it drifts all over.
Well, you know, you mentioned organics, and I know you were talking about plant-based in that instance, but even over on the meat side of things, I don't know if you caught this story a while back, but the Trump administration, USDA, has pulled the regulations that are required for how animals have to be treated if they're going to be sold as certified organic.
You mean like kosher, halal type?
No, the treatment for rules for being certified organic.
Oh, okay.
Suddenly, the Trump administration, USDA, has said that the Obama administration exceeded the agency's statutory authority under the Organic Foods Production Act of 1990 to issue animal welfare regulations.
Yeah, we don't need any welfare. You know, the confinements and stuff we put them through, that's...
Right,
you know,
so here's what happens. With the rules that were in place, producers and handlers participating in the National Organic Program stipulate that poultry must be housed in spaces that are big enough for the birds to move freely, stretch their wings, stand normally, and engage in natural behaviors. Livestock, meanwhile, must be provided access to an outdoor space year-round and be kept in indoor pens that are sufficiently large, solidly built, and comfortable so that the animals are kept clean, dry, and free of lesions. Well, that's all gone.
The overreacher, huh?
Yeah.
Barack overreacher Obama.
So
anyway, I got a letter, but
I mean, this is just to wrap put a little bow on all this. What they're doing is making sure that the more cruel meat producers are on a level playing field with the organic producers, saying that, you know, the government doesn't have the ability to force organic producers to not keep, you know, hogs in pens where they can't lay down or turn around.
Yeah. Well, we can thank the ag schools for that, you know.
Yeah, to a certain extent, but I think we can thank capitalism more. But one drives the other.
Yeah. Well, the Israelis found out when they started the kibbutz that the women that came from Europe, and right after the war was when they started using pesticides, right? And the women that moved into the kibbutzes from Europe had high rates of breast cancer and esophageal cancer, whatever. You know, they just completely higher than they'd ever experienced. The Minister of Health put all the cattle, milk cows, on an organic pesticide-free diet, and they went back up, you know, to normal rates of cancer. So, yeah, we've known for a long time that these agriculture chemicals are carcinogenic, and they're in the food chain. I mean, Silent Spring didn't just apply to hummingbirds and robins.
No. And eagles.
Yeah, right on. I just wanted to talk. I don't know if you saw the thing about Peter Hoekstra. He's our ambassador to Holland.
Oh, my God, yes.
You saw that? It's
no,
like,
no. But I mean, I know who he is. But what's he done?
Well, the reporter said, he says, I have no comment on that. And they said, hey, you're in Holland. You have to answer our questions.
Oh, wasn't he? Was he the asshole who said there are no-go zones and stuff? Was that that?
Yeah. And extending the borders end 100 miles from the coastlines. And, yeah, one of those. Anyway, speaking of overreaching, I got my newsletter from Greg Walden, Energy and Commerce Chairman in the House of Representatives. And, well, I just kind of got this. His first thing that he mentions is the law, my legislation that modernizes the FDA.
Oh, God.
We'll bring new medicines and medical devices to market sooner, spurring innovation, consumer choice, and most importantly, competition to drive down prices. Okay, next paragraph. For the fifth year in a row, House passed legislation I helped write, the Resilient Federal Forest Act. The next bold. At meetings and roundtables throughout our district, I've heard one message loud and clear from Oregonians. Enough smoke, enough fires. Next paragraph. National Defense Authorization Act to ensure our troops have the tools and training they need to keep themselves and us safe and give our men and women in uniform the largest pay raise they have seen in 8 years. The president also signed into law my bill, H.R. 4374, that makes our war fighters have access to the very latest medicines and medical devices unique to the battlefield. In other words, they can use them for test drugs. My legislation to introduce medical scribes into the VA system passed the House unanimously and will help VA doctors focus their attention on caring for veterans, not paperwork. Kind of like single payer, but you know, he doesn't mention that. We passed more than 460 pieces of legislation, more than under Obama, Clinton, and Bush during the same period. Oh, so he's getting in on the brag there, too. Okay, now this is what I want to bring attention. And my bill, Champion Healthy Kids Act, not CHIP, but championing, provides the longest extension of the CHIP program in the program's 20-year history.
So it's more than 20 years?
No, in the 20-year history of the program.
Right. So he's kind of lying again?
This bill also extends funding for community health centers, which provide essential services to 240,000 Oregonians across 63 sites in our district. To tackle the opioid epidemic, our committee is examining how the federal government can better partner with local efforts to combat the crisis. Bold part. Opioid overdoses kill more Oregonians each year than car accidents. And we need to direct our federal resources to end this scourge. And the last paragraph, speaking of car accidents, last year was the deadliest year on Oregon's roads in more than a decade. Self-driving cars and collision avoidance technologies are innovative solutions to make our roads safer and improve independence for our nation's seniors. Americans living with disabilities and people underserved by public transportation.
You know, I saw a line the other day, and you'll appreciate this because, you know, it's musically related. With the coming of self-driving vehicles, that means that in the future, in country songs, your truck can leave you too.
Well, I just wanted you to say that I've called his office about the FDA. I've called them about forest management. I've called them several times about the VA, but not to complain about, you know, medical access. It's that they're, you know, not giving the soldiers with PTSD proper treatment. And this, you know, this Children's Health Insurance Program, you think he was over there, you know, lobbying for it. I mean, that's the way he makes it sound.
Yeah, no. Well, okay, so I'm curious. This is a deeply teabaggy Republican Congress critter in an otherwise fairly blue state, and among other things, in a state in which recreational cannabis is legal, correct?
Yes, but in our county, they have the option because it wasn't passed. We voted like 2-1 against it in this county. So the city of Hermiston doesn't allow dispensaries. Pendleton has 3.
Okay, but what I'm getting at is, it would not play well for him to argue for the recriminalization of cannabis, would it?
No, or he wouldn't beat on his chest about all the new cannabis jobs. You know, there's been about, I think Governor Brown said, somewhere in the teens, thousands, you know, 13,000 or 18,000 new jobs since it's became legal. So, you know, they can't shake the thing about that with the forest. You know, let's say we've leaned on the forest for a long time. Of course, Walden, you know, he wants to get the cutout, even though there's really only 3 or 4 mills that are still operating in eastern Oregon. It, you know, it all goes into the port of Portland, the port of Longview, and gets exported. So the jobs, you know, besides the...
So, I mean, I wonder what would happen if you were to ask him how he felt about Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions, the turd's recent activity relative to cannabis.
Well, you know, he as you've mentioned before, that he's deeply involved in Christian broadcasting. I think he has some Sinclair stock that he's deeply vested in. But I also wanted to mention that...
But he also, you know, wants to go on being a member of Congress, and that could be a real real deal breaker for him if he said, you know, yeah, come on in, Jefferson, and destroy this industry that's provided 13,000 jobs.
Yeah. Well, and that, and, you know, his mention about self-driving cars are going to solve the transportation issues for public transportation. There's a lot of people that live in Hermiston but work at the Port of Boardman because they have several, processing plants there that run pretty much year-round. But they don't pay enough wages to make car payments and rent. So, if there was just a shuttle running that way. We have a shell running from here to the casino, and, you know, which is good because we didn't have anything for besides Greyhound to get from here to there. So, but it's nothing that he's had anything to do with.
So you're not seeing anything on the horizon of a meaningful Democratic challenger to him.
Well, they're still talking around it, but most of the people that I've seen running are a little too intellectual, you know, college professors and professionals that, I don't know, people around here have
little too egg-headed, not enough shit on their boots.
Exactly, and that people are a little bit leery of people who use them big words. And Walden, he's a straight talker, you know. He talks about the small businessman. He visits, you know.
The salt of the earth.
He gets all the photo ops, you know, at the mills, at, you know, ag convention. That's kind of the way he is. And, I'm surrounded by Trump pansies. This district voted about 70% for Trump. So they talk, you know, I told you, they talk about the governor, that bitch, you know, governor, and now she's the, I think I sent you that robocall from the guy who's running against Kate Brown.
Oh, yeah.
You know, about how this, the new Medicare, trying to get a Medicare surcharge on, you know, people's health care that they're not paying taxes on, that, you know, they're hitting the union saying, oh, they're trying to, you know, tax you for having... You know, and those are the people that generally vote Democratic. But, you know, they try to keep spinning it, you know, because Oregon doesn't have a sales tax. You know, people are, a lot of people don't think they should have to pay property taxes. They came from California and they're paying, you know, a much higher rate because they had the freeze on, you know, it could only increase a certain amount per year. You just have a lot of people that don't think the government can do anything. You know, they don't realize that, you know, disproportionately Oregon, you know, spends money on roads in Eastern Oregon per capita to all these.
Because that's where most of the people are.
Well, and you know, it's 3 hours from here to or 4 hours to Boise. It's 3 hours to Portland. It's 3.5 hours to Spokane, 5 hours to Seattle. So we're in the middle of nowhere.
Or if you're not, you can see it from there, right? Yeah.
That's why we have a Walmart distribution center. We have a, the brown one, and Federal Express, both, United Parcel have distribution centers here too, because Hinkle is the largest, rail yard, outside of, Oakland or, you know.
I had no idea.
Oh, it's huge. It's huge. So, Hinkle Depot. I was born just, first place I lived was within a slingshot distance from our front door. It was the train station with, you know, get on the train, go to Chicago, go to Florida. You know, just right there.
Yeah, I noticed that Amtrak service through Santa Barbara, California is suspended pending clearance of the rails of a whole lot of mountain that fell down on them.
Yeah, that's a beautiful, beautiful area of the coast too.
Oh, it is. And you gotta wonder geologically what's going on when that, I mean, even that much rain can cause that much mountain to just sort of give up the ghost.
Well, they just got so much so fast, and there was probably enough.
Well, the ground, a lot of that ground got baked by fire.
Well, that and the organic matter that was left when it gets wet, it becomes really slippery. You know, so that stuff that seeped down in the ground with that heavy rain just made everything like it was greased.
Yeah, we saw the same thing. A couple of springs back. East of here all around here, when a whole bunch of this area just got completely swamped by floodwaters because there was no vegetation to stop to help soak up the rain. That's what happens when you denude hillsides.
Yeah. Well, you saw those pictures I took in July of the gorge and that one where it's the Bridge of the Gods. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Well, that area there where it burned, they've had a slide there that they have people working 7 days a week on, and they still, you know, it's down to one lane eastbound through that area. They're trying to stabilize the side of that hill, but, you know, it's still moving. And some of it has to do with the fire, and some has to do with just, you know, how the rain comes. You know, it rains a lot here, but it seems to come in deluges more, you know, like a more of a monsoon type thing.
Yeah, it's not even what you understand as temperate rainforest rain.
Yeah.
It's one thing to get a little bit every day. It's another thing to get, you know, a lot all at once.
Yeah, it's like having a big carbon dioxide blanket on that keeps our oceans nice and warm, and when a storm comes, it's carrying a lot of energy and water. And the jet stream's changed.
Yep, damn Chinese hoax. Well, Clarity, I'm glad to hear from you. I hope you have yourself a wonderful evening, and you're gonna be around tomorrow. You got a gig?
Oh, no, I think I'm going to make it. No, I don't have anything till next weekend. We're doing a fundraiser for the high school music department. They're cooking up a dinner, and their jazz band's playing, and then we're playing.
Oh, that'll be nice.
Oh, it will, because we'll have a good crowd, and they'll be like a home team.
Yeah, well, and you're working on the side of the Angels. High school music programs need all the help they can get.
They sure do. Oh, I also wanted to just say, Bob, I was ready to, you know, direct message you that if you're that close to ledge, you pulled me back a few times. So, you know, if you're feeling like that, don't fail to ask.
I absolutely won't. I appreciate that, Clarity. You take care.
I will. Love you, Bob. Bye.
All right. Bye now. That's our buddy Clarity calling from the sparsely populated part of Oregon. It's about 9 minutes before the hour. Looks like we're gonna post a goose egg this evening, so that'll make for a $400 fundraising goal tomorrow evening. Sorry, it's just how it turned out. But before we go, you remember at the beginning of the program, because I, you know, when it's possible, I like to loop the program back and sort of tidy everything up. This is another one of those issues of how to ask questions of Sarah Hustlebuck Sandbags, or at least it is on indirectly. You recall that while he was having his hissy over shithole countries, and I had a note from Matt in San Francisco a little bit ago. Hi, Matt. Subject line, WTF. George Carlin is turning over in his grave. I've heard half a dozen distinguished broadcasters utter the phrase shithole country as if it was a normal word of discourse. Wasn't shit one of the seven words you can't say on the TV machine? Yeah, but once the president says it and you're quoting him, it becomes journalism. And frankly, I'm glad they're saying it, because it has more force and effect, or at least I hope it does. Maybe I'm wrong. But yeah, that comment, shithole countries. He doesn't like people coming to the United States from shithole countries like El Salvador and Haiti and Nigeria and other countries in Africa. No, he specifically said that he would, why can't we have more people come to America from Norway? And everything that I said that goes with that. But this is an example of the dysfunction of what is left of Donald Trump's brain. Somebody says a word to him, and it sort of sticks. So he met with the Prime Minister of Norway. So Norway is in his brain right now. And all the little spirochetes are, are chattering, Norway, Norway, Norway. So he wants to know, why can't we get more decent people coming to America from Norway? And then, lo and behold, we get a little bit more Norway. In particular, a statement from Donald Trump. The story published today in the Washington Post by Alex Horton. And this is a quote. This isn't somebody reporting something he said, like the shithole countries comment. Standing next to Norwegian Prime Minister Erna Solberg on Wednesday at the White House, he said, and I quote, not kidding. In November, we started delivering the first F-52s and F-35 fighter jets. We have a total of 52, and they've delivered a number of them already, a little ahead of schedule. Uh-huh. The F-52 fighter jets delivered to Norway. Now, because they're a legitimate news organization, the folks at the Washington Post immediately reached out to manufacturers of military aircraft and said, y'all got an F-52 in development? Is there any such thing as an F-52 aircraft? Lockheed Martin builds the F-35. And they said, the Norwegian government has authorized funding for 40 F-35s. They've taken delivery of 10 to date, and they're all sitting there on the ground and haven't crashed yet. And that's really awesome because the F-35 is very good at crashing. It's kind of we like to call it the flying paperweight here. There's no such thing as an F-52. He is such a poor reader that he saw F-35 and he saw the number 52 and those became F-52s. In November, we started delivering the first F-52s and F-35 fighter jets. We have a total of 52. They've delivered a number of them already, a little ahead of schedule. F-52s. Now, this is the funniest part of the story. The F-52 does exist, if one uses a sort of broader definition of exists. If you want to fly an F-52, by God, you can fly an F-52. All you have to do is go and put out the money for a highfalutin gaming system that will run Call of Duty Advanced Warfare. And then you can fly the F-52, which the Call of Duty wiki page describes as an advanced fighter aircraft in service of the United States of America and the Sentinel Task Force, equipped with afterburners for greater speed to outrun aircraft, as well as air brakes, which provide the fighter with additional maneuverability in tight corners or for avoiding enemy fire. Yes, the F-52 is so good, it can avoid bullets. That's some aircraft, that F-52. With the air brakes. Air brakes! Right. The wonderful, no, the terrifying spider-infested, spirochete-crawling, empty spaces of the Trumpian brain. With a note saying, I like to help, Glenn just jumped in. Thank you, Glenn. As did our folks, as did our friend David. Thank you very kindly. That takes our fundraising goal down to 170, so we're only at 370 for tomorrow evening. Thank you very kindly to both of you. Much appreciated. I've had fun tonight. I hope you have, too. Silent R. Lamar says, are air brakes anything like Skyhook? Ah, hand brakes. Haven't you ever seen Bugs Bunny with the bomber plane and he stops it right before it hits the ground and says, eh, hand brakes. Right, there you go. Now, I've had fun. I hope you have too. No comments about shitholes. Well, in fact, it's time to get out of here, so let's roll, Griggsy. The sooner we get out of this shithole, the better. Had to, you understand. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to all of you who spend your precious finite time engaged in this little conversation. Thank you to everyone who helps keep the program on the air, our subscribers, folks who kick in during the program, outside the program. Thank you one and all. You're the only reason this program has continued for as long as it has. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Sparky, in the chat room. Thank you, Steve, who is on injured reserve right now while he's on the 5-day disabled list as his ankle heals. Get back. Take care of yourself. Don't hurry back. Just get back when you can, Steve. And thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Night, y'all.